Hello and welcome to the Mystic Mind Podcast. I'm your host, Jesse, and today I'm going to play the first half of a two-part conversation with Jarrett Sanchez of the Next Step Podcast. Let's dive right in, and I'll see you guys on the other side. Welcome to the Mystic Mind Podcast. I'm joined today by my buddy, Jarrett Sanchez, who is a very amazing human being and a brilliant guy, a good friend, and you might know him from Bleeda. He also has a podcast called The Next Step, and welcome to the Mystic Mind, Jarrett.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, for sure, bro. So, let's catch up with you, man. I'm just going to kind of turn the floor over to you. It's been a while since we've sort of connected, and we're into a bunch of the same sort of topics. What's new on your radar, and kind of get us up to speed, if you would.
Man, I met you originally, like, working on Bleeda, which is, you know, kind of like the countercultural podcast out there, you know, a little psychedelic thinking and stuff. And so I haven't been much into that these days. It's always in the background. But really, it's, fuck, man, as boring as it sounds, it's just I've been doing a lot of the lame old domestic life, you know, just working and being with the family and stuff. So a lot of the wilder ideas I like to entertain have sort of gone on the back burner. But not all the way. So I'm still into some weird stuff. I guess you could say that since we haven't talked in a while, really, and since then, I'm still the same guy, but I've got new cells in my body. I've had some different thoughts, and I just recently saw David Lynch's Eraserhead. So I'm very changed in a way.
I've never seen that one, so I'll have to
see it. Oh my God, dude, you need to fucking see that movie. Holy shit.
Yeah, I'm there.
David Lynch and Nine Inch Nails are like two artists that I know I like probably everything they put out. I just haven't really gotten into them much. Like, I know it's sitting there, it's waiting, and I know I'm going to like it. And so those are like two artists that I really enjoy. And I'm like, oh, I got to get around to seeing Eraserhead. Somebody posted a video of the song that is played in this really fucked up movie, Eraserhead. And so that was like the last straw, like, oh my God, this is the creepiest shit I've ever seen. I need to see this whole film. And for anybody in the audience who's seen Eraserhead, they are already shaking their head yes, like, yeah. It is so just wrong on so many levels, but right on so many other levels. And then, yeah, Nine Inch Nails is the other one. I finally got into The Fragile, so I'm like a kid in Christmas time.
Oh, I love that, man. Well, that's partly why I'm frozen in the past when it comes to old music, is the music itself is sort of frozen in time, and you can go back to it at any time. But there's so much new music and new art coming out. It's sometimes, it's almost like a full-time job just trying to keep up with all the creativity and production out there, which is encouraging because, you know, so many of us are consumers, myself included, and it's, mm-hmm. I mean, well, you know, an interesting thought sort of came into my mind, maybe we can touch on.
Cool.
Is a guy like David Lynch is actually tied into the transcendental meditation movement.
Right.
There's a sort of, you could see it as an irony that a person waxing sort of peaceful, meditative on, in one area of their life is then making these, you know, maybe really dark sort of art. And I'm fascinated by that because I don't necessarily see a duality there, and I think a lot of people do. And I think part of like where we are today, and I'd be curious to get your thoughts on this, is sort of integrating our own shadow material.
Mm-hmm.
And I think dark things serve a purpose in sort of like exploring our consciousness. And I'm wondering, you know, do you see it as a positive thing connecting with, you know, like Eraserhead or something really gritty that's not necessarily all new agey and bubbly and, you know, love and all that?
Well, one thing I'll say right away about like the dark stuff is it's there, you know, it's there. So whether you want to say it's a unity or a duality, no matter what. Oh, did you hear that?
No, I missed that.
Oh, it's like all this background noise. It just must be on my end. Must be this microphone thing. Okay, as long as it's not coming through on your recording, then we're all good.
No, this is a lo-fi production anyway.
All right.
Please continue.
So the darkness is there. So no matter if you want to talk about it as a unity or a duality or what, I mean, it's there. And that means to me, that just tells me before I put much thought into it, that it has to be contended with. It's got to be dealt with in some manner. And I've always been attracted to like dark things. I've always had like a dark imagination, and I like horror movies, even though I don't like nerd out on them and stuff. I really appreciate, you know, the genre, and it's something that's always fascinated me. And then growing up and learning a little bit about Carl Jung's shadow theory, that completely made sense to me, that this is something we should be working on, this idea of integration of the darker material, the shadow side. And where somebody would like David Lynch, what I personally feel he's doing is just taking some of these really weird like dream realities that you'll have, these just really uncomfortable and creepy and dark dreams, and then putting some of his own, you know, self into it, and then just whatever ideas come up, and then presenting that to the audience. So it's not, to me, it's not something that you're supposed to like get necessarily. It's a bit irrational, but it's supposed to be something you feel, it's something you experience. And in that way, it gets you in touch with your dark side, and perhaps in a safe way, because there's that buffer of it's the movie that brought you to that. Whereas Jungian psychology, psychedelics, that brings you face to face with your dark side, whether you like it or not, and you better deal with it in a hurry, you know. Yeah, and I don't know, but basically, I do think that it's not a duality, that the dark side is there just as much as the light. You know, but we have to make sense of it, and decide, well, are we going to repress this dark stuff? You know, and if we are, there are consequences, and what are we going to do to deal with those consequences? You know.
It seems like we tend to repress and project the darkness instead of integrating it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, I feel a little hell-bent at times on this sort of philosophy that nothing is other and everything's one. And it's sort of hard to reconcile suffering and darkness, but I love Alan Watts because, you know, it seems like the darkest stuff is really just the most creative disguise of love light. You know, it's the most sort of out there forgetting in the game of hide and seek, if one chooses to sort of view consciousness or reality through that model. But, I mean, there's something primal and, I guess primal would be a good word, about shadow material and darkness. And I guess I'm trying to find a healthy way to sort of, we were sort of batting around the idea of non-judgment in our Skype text before we started. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's so easy to judge things, and I'm wondering, what are your feelings on just on judgment and good and bad and, you know.
Oh, man, yeah. And maybe I should just kind of go back and preface everything I say. I don't really know what the hell I'm talking about. I don't have any books or anything. I'm not a philosopher. I'm just, you know, a normal dude like you. And that's what's cool. And that's one of the things I really love about your show. You've had some more well put together guests, but you know, it's still you. You're like a dude that I can meet at a party and strike up a conversation with, and by the end of the night, we're sitting around the fire, you know, passing a joint and talking about real stuff. You know what I mean? And then we're able to put that into the podcast form. So that's just something for the audience, because that's a big question you're asking me. And the way I look at judgment and things of that nature, it's changed. It changes. You know, I don't always know exactly, because I, like I said, I'm very much in the going to work and then being with the family mode.
Yeah.
And it's really hard to entertain a lot of the more esoteric ideas and philosophies when you're in that world. And it's extremely difficult. And it can pull people away, and it does pull people away very often, and just keeps them in that normal world, quote unquote normal world. And so I find peace, not ultimate peace, but I do find some peace in picking for myself as just a basis of my practice, a lot of the work of Rudolf Steiner. And I know we've talked about that before. Just because I've for some reason I resonate with some of the things he says, and a lot of it I don't. A lot of it I just kind of, I don't touch, I don't get into. But his basic practices and awarenesses, it's a mixture of like the West and the East a bit. It's you have to do it, obviously. You can't just intellectualize about it. And like his book Theosophy, there's some really weird stuff in there. But in the end, he says to start walking this path towards, you know, spiritual knowledge and stuff, try and obtain the consciousness where you're not judging anything as good or bad, where you're going to look at something and you're not shutting yourself off from it. You're completely opening to it, but you're not engaging in these levels of soul, you would say, where you're either liking it and sympathizing with it, or you're not liking it and having an antipathy towards it, you know? And I take that as a challenge to try and get to that level where you don't necessarily like or dislike something. You just perceive it for what it is as much as you can. And so that's tough. That's not easy. That is not easy at all. You know, especially just walk around a shopping mall and try and not, you know, this is for, I'm speaking it from a guy's point of view, but go to a shopping mall and try and not, you know, look at a very attractive female and have all of these sympathetic feelings for, you know, her appearance. You know, that's really tough. If you can get to the point where you see a 10 plus knockout, you know, supermodel walking around and you're not engaging with her in that level, you're just going to take her as information and perception, you know, that's a huge accomplishment, you know, for somebody like me, at least, you know. And I mean, applying that to the world outside, you know, the horrible things going on, it's tough. And so I don't know, I'm kind of not answering the question, but no, I guess for me, I just find some peace in some of the things I learned from Steiner and walking that path a bit, incorporating that in my life, and just going from there.
Yeah, it seems like, I guess he calls it sympathy. You said antipathy. He calls it sympathy and antipathy, right?
Yeah, yeah. And just categorization of these activities of soul.
Okay. Yeah, it seems... so many of us, I can only speak for myself, it seems like a lot of my identity is sort of constructed upon preferences and mm-hmm. you know, sort of attraction and repulsion or sympathy mm-hmm. versus antipathy.
Right.
And, you know, I hear a lot of, you know, sort of buzz about, you know, becoming the witness of your drama life and not the victim. Mm. And, I don't know, it seems that... it seems like my identity is so often wrapped up in the story of me and my preferences, and that my morality is sort of filtered through the lens of that perception. Like, I'm kind of brought back to that Zen story that I occasionally bring up, which is where the neighbors are constantly commenting on what happens to this farmer. Like, his son breaks his leg, and they're like, oh, that's bad, and then the army comes to recruit, and he can't go to war. Oh, that's good. And how we're always assigning these sort of... judgment mm-hmm. calls and trying to like assess things. But often the things that hurt and that we don't want are the things that we need. And so I guess where I'm struggling these days is trying to distinguish between the will of my higher self versus my ego steering the ship and having not yet developed the faculties to discern one voice from the other. Because mm-hmm. I often feel like there's a part of me that's serving like a higher interest, and then a part of me that, well, it's like that William Burroughs quote I put on Facebook, something about, you know, inside every man is a parasitic being working not at all toward his interest. Mm-hmm. And I guess one thing that I'm wanting to get your take on is so many people, and I brought this up in the last podcast, so many people are hung up on like killing the ego. But yeah. When I hear you talk about Steiner and the I ego, and he has a different conceptualization of the ego, and I'm wondering if you can sort of illuminate that a little bit.
Yeah, you could say there's a higher and a lower ego in his system, and the lower ego would be Jesse Miller. Jarrett Sanchez, you know, who you are in this incarnation, mm-hmm. a temporary being, yeah, temporary ego. The higher ego, this stems from the idea that first there is a spiritual realm and then that becomes material, okay? And so this higher ego is that which you come from in the spiritual realm. It's like this concept of like an oversoul. So your life right now, it's also reincarnation built in here. your life right now is just an outcropping. It is an extension of this true ego, you know, this higher spiritual self. And in order to become more self-aware and to develop spiritual organs, newer spiritual awarenesses, we come into this material realm and learn stuff. And there's a feedback process going on. And I mean, it's a really complicated system, and it gets easier the more you delve into it. There's so many, like, it's I don't know. I personally enjoy it, and I don't really recommend it to anybody else unless it seems like they will be interested in it, because there is so much. There's the different levels of spirit, soul, and body, right? And so you have the spirit, which is where everything comes from. The soul, though, is a mixture of your spirit and your body. It's your inner experience, your inner world. And for Steiner, that is the battleground we have in this life. That is where the lower ego and the higher ego are both kind of struggling for some ground, because the higher ego is not strong. It's in the seed form. It's still waiting to be ultimately born, and it requires the acceptance of the lower ego to get out of the way and to not follow the compulsions of the soul, the many compulsions coming at us from all these different directions, you know, our instincts, our desires, our drives, all these things that we have, and there's external stuff too that acts upon our soul that's pulling us in all these different directions. And then there is that quiet voice, though, that says, well, yes, there is all that, but what we should be doing is this. This is ultimately what is good for us. You know, that's that voice that's so hard to hear, of that higher self that's working for this higher power, whatever you want to, you know, whatever terms you want to put around it. And so, that's the battleground in the realm of the soul, where you have all these sympathies, antipathies, attractions, repulsions, and all these things. And wherever they might come from, whether your own DNA, or if you believe in, you know, these spiritual realities, and maybe it's beings that want to use us for their own purpose, whatever. You know, there's a lot of different ideas you'll find in Steiner's work, but when it comes down to it, it's the battleground within yourself. What are you going to choose to do? You know, which path do you take in this moment? And that's the hard part. But that's where I've been more and more focusing my attention, as far as trying to become a better person and just figuring out how to get out of my own way, as it takes up a lot of time, you know, because that's what it seems like, just getting out of my own way and letting this higher being that seems trapped within, letting it out and giving it a bit more freedom to act. And it's scary, really, you know.
What's scary for you?
To the idea of just letting this higher self have control. And I don't even think that's really how it works. I think it's just letting this higher self express it, its desire, its will. And that's the thing that keeps me coming back to exploring consciousness and spirituality and things like that, is the little whisper from that higher self, and just experiences I've had that once you have it, you know, you can't deny it, you know. These things keep me coming back, because otherwise it's very easy for me to just kind of fall back into that fold of work, family life and stuff. You know, I can do that very easily. Although there will be a part of me, though, that will just be screaming and withering and dying the whole time. And so because of that, I don't completely fall back. I don't watch television anymore. You know, I'm always trying to improve myself in some small way, whatever I can do every day. And, but the scary part really is, it's a combination of things like, well, what's going to happen to my outside world, to my little ego, if I let the higher self take over? You know, my life's a mess. Is it just going to really screw things up even more for me? But yet,
right,
then it's like, well, if that's what needs to be done, I mean, if that's the right thing to do, shouldn't I just trust in that? You know, but that's also really hard too when you have children, you know how that is. It's like going through all these personal transformations and then trying to raise another human being.
Yes.
You know, in this, especially right now. I mean, it's not like the nice, clean-cut 1950s America, you know, where the world works as advertised. You know, now it's like, what do I tell my kid about what's going on? Yeah, son, we got economic collapse, you know, looming somewhere in the background. Everything's fine. Just watch TV. Oh, like, oh, fuck, man. Oh, fuck. It's tough. It's tough. But, and so this idea of just, I mean, there's a desire in my smaller ego to just let go and to let the higher ego take over. But then again, there's just that battleground of the soul that it keeps me from just doing that completely. And then there's just also that fear of what the hell is going to happen when I do that. And will I be true? Will I have any hangups that dilute the water, that still incorporate the illusion into what my higher self is trying to get me to achieve or to do? It's like I don't necessarily trust myself yet to be strong enough to be a clear channel, you know? Kind of sad, but it's real life.
It seems,
man.
Like domestic life is really the testing ground for that stuff too. Because I'll be honest, I spent a lot of time sort of pushing this stuff around, and I don't really see it helping me to be a better dad sometimes.
Yeah.
If anything, I you know, it's like my 8-year-old son. He doesn't need to hear that. You know, that's just his ego talking. And, you know, because that's my ego pointing out his ego.
Yeah.
And really, I guess where the Mystic Mind podcast is moving, I'm hoping the direction it's moving into is sort of the embracing of more practical tools for being more in tune, being more balanced. And I'm wondering if you can maybe point us in the right direction with some exercises or anything that you're doing. You were mentioning the Caduceus meditation. Maybe something really simple you can throw out there for listeners where, you know, when they're done listening to this podcast, they can try it out. I know there's like a pinpoint meditation that Steiner talks about. Maybe there's something you want to mention.
Yeah, sure. And I think it's really good that you bring up the idea of practical stuff, because that's something that helps me stay grounded a lot and brings me back always in regards to spirituality or other things. It's like, well, I can think all this stuff, but what am I doing with it, you know? And there's something also that Steiner talks about, the differentiation between your thinking, your feeling, and your willing. Mm. You could think about something and you could really feel strongly about it, like, oh, there's all these problems in the world. That's so bad. Well, what the hell are you actually doing about it? You know, and I'm not trying to play the conscience card here, you know, by saying that, but I'm just using it as an example. You know, we got to stay grounded. We are here in physical reality, so we got to do something. You know, we got to do something. So practical stuff. As far as Steiner's work goes, there's a few books of his where he gives a lot of his exercises. And like, if I were to like tell somebody who is interested, you know, start with his book Theosophy. There's a lot of weird stuff in there, but it just starts. You get familiar with his concepts, and then there's the practical ideas that I kind of mentioned before. Then his next book after that, that's probably good to go to, is Occult Science, Outline of Occult Science. And you can't read Steiner intellectually. You can't try and say, oh, well, based upon what he said here, his logic doesn't hold up here. You can't read it like that. It's meant to be read. Much of his work is meant to be read sort of like a story. Like he's kind of telling you a story, and you just let this story sort of unfold inside of yourself in your inner experience, in your soul. And by that, certain spiritual activity is elicited. And that leads you on to, you know, more awareness of what he's talking about, of these spiritual realms. So in Occult Science, it starts off with a description of basically how human beings have come about over untold amounts of time, you know, created by higher spiritual realities. You know, it's not one God saying, let there be light, and everything became. It's this process. He's kind of showing you, here's stuff that's going on in the universe, and you are a product of some of that stuff. And so you let these stories, you know, just sort of develop inside of you. And that's a big feature of his book, Outline of Occult Science. And it's you can't understand it rationally. It just you'll drop the book immediately if that's what you're doing. But then he gets into some exercises there too. One that I find very helpful is the Rose Cross meditation. And I can't summarize it, but I'm telling this to, you know, your audience so that they can go check it out on their own, because, you know, you kind of have to memorize the steps and really work at it. But that's a very good one that I think helps to just put you in a certain mind state of purification, of, you know, of wanting to sidestep your desires and impulses and give that up to a higher purpose. You know, even if you don't know what the end of that higher purpose is, you can, if you feel that inside of yourself, that's what you're working for. You know, it's not something that you can actually write down and categorize necessarily or define it, but it's an experience, an inner experience. And so I recommend that very much. And if you go online, well, there's also his Knowledge of Higher Worlds, where there's a lot of practical exercises, and I'll go over one in a minute. But then there's also Guidance and Esoteric Training, which you can find at the Rudolf Steiner Archive online. And Guidance and Esoteric Training has a lot of stuff that you can work with there too. There's like daily practices where you just do one practice on Monday, let's say, and it's like a write speech, where you steer all the conversations you have for that day towards a higher level of conversation. You know, not necessarily towards spirituality, but don't engage in banal chatter. Don't engage in talk about the weather or, you know, the latest news item. And whenever you find yourself there, bring the conversation up to something more important, you know, and more global or whatever you want to call it. And you know, so he goes through, there's like practices for every day, and you just start to incorporate this stuff into your life. And it's helping you to develop, you know, an outer presence of self-control and not detachment, but just you're not at the will of everything going on around you. You know, you're not just being led this way and that way by everything that's happening. You're able to stop and observe and to not get so caught up in your day-to-day world. But at the same time, you're in the middle of your day-to-day world. You're not escaping it, you know. It's just affecting you differently, and you're engaging with it then differently as well. One of the practices from Knowledge of Higher Worlds is really kind of a nice one. And he's trying to get you to sense and to distinguish within yourself different types of energies with this practice. And what he tells you to do is to look at something, to go outside and look for like a plant that's like budding, you know, that's swelling and budding and blooming, and to just look at that plant and focus on that budding and that swelling for 5 minutes, and try and get to the point where nothing else around you, nothing else inside of you is in your mind. It's only you just focusing on this living reality of this little swelling bud on a plant, right? And whatever kind of buds on plants that the audience might want to look at is fine with me. and so you just start doing that. And he talks about that feeling is kind of like the feeling of like the sun rising in the morning, you know, just sort of like an outpouring sort of good feeling, right? And then alternately, you want to look at something that's decaying, something that's dying, you know, maybe just a bunch of dead plant matter itself. And he says, focus on that for 5 minutes and let nothing else into your mind and your soul. And he says that energy is more akin to the moon rising. It's more kind of like the clear, quiet moon at night. And so by doing this, he's just getting you more familiar with the different types of energies that he says you encounter in the spiritual realms. And personally, I've found great benefit in that exercise. And I can't say that I've gotten to the point where I can completely concentrate for 5 minutes on these things, but you work at it, you know, you do what you can. And it really does start to feel like, at least, it's opening up something in your soul and just kind of making you more aware on levels that were in the background before. They were in the dark. They were always there, but he's specifically getting you to pay attention to them in your own way. You know, it's everybody's perception is different, but we're all perceiving a similar reality, you know? So it's fun. You try the stuff on your own.
It seems like, you know, it's like developing, new muscles.
Yeah.
Doing these sort of exercises. I would go so far as to say it, you know, on an ego level and, you know, sort of body level, it hurts in one respect. this is something I brought up in the last podcast, is I think that often for people, I can only speak for myself, that the spiritual path, there's this feeling of giving up this big thing. Like I feel like this is being asked of me, that I have to give up something really big. And unfortunately, I don't really feel like I have the fruits of a practice to sort of entice me out of myself, or sort of provide a bit of relief from that sense of loss. And so I'm just trying to encourage myself and encourage, you know, all the listeners, you know, try and move past that that hump of just sort of, it's, for me, it's really just like the first 5 minutes of meditating, because if I'm stressed out enough, really, I find myself naturally just sitting there meditating. My eyes start fluttering. I go into a sort of, you know, different brain wave state. But when I plan to meditate and make this big deal out of it, then, you know, all of a sudden the mental chatter starts going. And it seems helpful to have exercises like the dead plant matter, or the blooming plant, or the candle flame, or the very tip of a pin to meditate. Because it seems like we have these five senses which can distract us from our practice and our goal, or can be tools to sort of recenter us, like incense, using, you know, the sense of smell to sort of occupy that sense, but with an intention, an intentionality of meditation and focus. Or, you know, the eyes, using a yantra, or, you know, you get my point. And it's funny how the senses, I feel like we're often, you know, condemning the senses. And so I'm always eager to find sort of more holistic practices where we can use our bodies. And, you know, I think that's what asanas, physical yoga postures, it's like we're using the body to induce a less thought-filled state of mind. So anyway, I just wanted to make that point.
And I think everybody experiences that, where it's when you try to, say, meditate or something, then all of a sudden that's the last thing you can do. You know, because you're just sitting there and thoughts about every fucking thing is coming up, you know. Some girl you dated in third grade might pop into your head. You know, you're like, dude, where did that come from? You know, and then you could be in a completely silent room, but you're still going to have all the stuff going on in your nervous system, you know? And that is extremely challenging. And to, when you're doing all this stuff on your own, like I told you, I've been studying and learning Kung Fu a little
Right. I'd love to talk about that.
Yeah. We can talk about that. Totally. But I'm at the beginning stages of that for sure. Okay. But, I've shown a lot of initiative on my own, to just start trying to do stretches and some exercises and stuff. And it's really tough when you're doing it on your own, as opposed to, say, going to a Kung Fu school, which actually isn't where I'm learning it. I'm learning it in backyards, which is actually kind of nice. But when you have somebody else there that's like, no, do 25 push-ups and then this, and then the other thing, you're going to do it more easily, because you can't cop out. You can't just say, oh, well, that's good enough. Nobody's watching me. You know, I'm on my own. It's so much easier to be distracted. But when you have a teacher or something like that, it keeps you more focused. But where are teachers in the West, you know? So that is a huge challenge, a huge, huge challenge. And one of the things that I find in Steiner is a teacher. His approach is pretty simple, so it's resonated with me. It doesn't get too far out when you just stick to the basics, you know, the practical stuff. And one of the key things that you'll find in the guidance and esoteric training, there's the introductory exercise where you concentrate on an idea for 5 minutes. You know, and he always mentions this. He's like, this stuff can be done just 5 minutes a day, you know. But just try and get to 5 minutes. Concentrate, pick an idea for this week. You know, let's say you're going to do it 3 times this week. You know, a pencil. Pick a pencil. So you call up in your mind, you know, the idea of the pencil, and just all thoughts that you have for the next 5 minutes. It's the idea of not turning off your thoughts. It's controlling, being the king in your life of thought. Okay. So for 5 minutes, everything you think has to relate, has to come back to the pencil. You know? So when I remember doing this, and I would think, oh, pencil, and then start thinking back, where does this come from? You know, and you have blackboards, and cave paintings, and then just the idea to put things down, you know, and then always relating it back to the pencil. And then at the end of this 5 minutes, come back to the original idea of the pencil that you started with, which probably would be like, you know, a number two, you know, lead pencil that you called upon in your mind, you know, but just bring it back to where you started. But for 5 minutes, you're only going to be thinking thoughts about pencil or related to pencil. And anytime you find yourself thinking about something else, immediately bring it back to pencil. You know, try and do that for 5 minutes. It's hard. But that's where I find value in Steiner's work, because the more I do that, you know, the more I don't just say, okay, 30 seconds is enough. The more I'm my own instructor, the more benefit I get from it. And that's the one thing that I guess I would encourage everybody to try, is just work with not controlling your life of thought, but getting it under your control in a way. I mean, I hate the term controlling because it has so many negative connotations, but it's your mind. So, you know, we got all these thoughts coming at us, and it's really easy to see that when you try and just focus on one idea for 5 minutes, and you see how much of a river of thought you're actually in the middle of at all times. And it just pulls you this way and that. When you try and just stay grounded and say, well, this is where I'm going to anchor for right now, you realize, wow, I'm in the middle of a current. This is a flow. Not necessarily a bad thing, but, you know, it's just try and do it for 5 minutes. You know, that's my challenge.
I think that's a worthy challenge, because I think we often confuse, you know, quantity with quality. And I'd almost rather set goals that I can meet, because I often set myself up to fail. Like, you know, I'll judge my practice. I'll judge that 5 minutes isn't good enough. But the irony is, there's an eternity in every moment, and there's an infinite amount of space between two points. So it almost seems like even literally 1 minute spent totally committed to that focus, it's like the ganja, you know, it's all about quality, not quantity. Yeah. But that in time, it's almost like becomes easier to do more. Well, it's funny, I keep finding myself using the word doing, and it's like this idea of doing meditation versus giving myself permission to do nothing and just breathe. Mm. And some meditations are more willful, more focused, and some are more, you know, emptying. And just sort of freeing oneself from needing to think anything. But, yeah, it seems like the mind, I joke that I have an untrained mind. And it's trained for thinking and abstractions and philosophizing. But it's also trained to close off and draw conclusions and hold beliefs and preferences. And I'm really fascinated by the idea of experience void of analysis. It sounds incredibly freeing. And I also like Steiner's ideas of his idea of separating thinking, feeling, and willing. I mean, I kind of front to know Steiner, but I don't really. You know, Lindsay, she actually knows a hell of a lot more about Steiner than I do. In fact, you guys should do a podcast about Steiner. That'd be awesome. But you know, she would tell me about, you know, separation of thinking, feeling, and willing. And when a person actually dies, from what I understand, those three elements within the human, you know, naturally separate in the higher worlds. Is this ringing a bell?
Yeah.
And that the task, well, one of the tasks seems to be to be able to think, and I said this before on the podcast, so forgive the redundancies, but, you know, to think independently of feeling and willing, and to will independently of thinking, and you know, all three combinations. Mm-hmm. And I often find that my thinking is dictated by my feelings, and my actions are dictated by the thoughts in response to my feelings. Mm-hmm. So really, I guess what this is leading me into is your fascination with Jan's work. Well, not only Jan, but the trivium and the quadrivium, what you're doing on the next step, and sort of moving away from some of the, like, the psychedelic thinking and some of the philosophizing, more into, yeah, how do we work with what we have, the tools that we have, for instance, critical thinking, and, you know, how do we begin to sort of cut through the bullshit.
Welcome back. Hope you enjoyed part one of the two-part conversation with Jarrett of The Next Step. You can find Jarrett at thenextstep.podomatic.com. and probably wait a week and put out part two, which dives into the trivium, critical thinking, that sort of thing. And yeah, I'm excited to go there with you guys. So if you want to get in touch, you can do so at mysticmindpodcast@gmail.com. The site's at mysticmind.podomatic.com if you want to make a contribution. And I'm going to close out with a Critter Jones song called Happiness. My brother Corey wrote this song. And this is an old recording we did with Brad Smith and Christopher Thorne of Blind Melon. Gosh, this must have been 9 years ago at Downtown Rehearsal in L.A. So, yeah, this is me and Corey playing this one. All right, love you guys. Love and light, many blessings. Oh, yeah, check out CritterJones.com. We've got the CD for sale and all that good stuff. And make sure you check out thenextstep.podomatic.com. All right, guys, until next week, here's Critter Jones with Happiness. Bye.
I tried to give it up, but I'm back. I'm hooked.
Doesn't hinge on part.